Right now, Saudi Arabia is pouring well over $1 trillion into Vision 2030 mega
Oh,
projects.
absolutely. The scale is just, I mean, it's unprecedented.
Yeah, we are talking about entirely new cities, massive renewable energy grids, and these huge global logistics hubs.
Right.
But historically speaking, like 9 out of 10 global mega projects go over budget, or they just completely fail to deliver on their initial promises.
Yeah, it's a terrifying statistic when you really think about it.
Exactly. So how do you look at, say, a $1 billion solar farm or a high-speed rail network and mathematically guarantee you aren't just, building a giant expensive mistake?
Well, you have to apply a ruthless, highly sophisticated filter. I mean, the sheer scale of capital being deployed right now means that relying on gut instinct or even just basic accounting is pretty much a fast track to insolvency.
Right.
Every single massive project has to survive a brutal mathematical gauntlet before a single shovel even hits the dirt.
Welcome to our deep dive. Our mission today is to basically shortcut your path to understanding capital investment appraisal.
It's such a crucial topic.
It really is. We are breaking down how businesses sift through a mountain of risky ideas to find the ones that will actually pay off. And we're looking at this specifically within the high-stakes environment of Saudi Vision 2030.
Right, and we'll also touch on how advanced investment platforms like Osul Gamma are fundamentally changing the way these decisions are modeled today.
Okay, let's unpack this. Think about when you make a big life purchase, like buying a house, right?
Sure.
You don't just look at the sticker price. You look at the mortgage rate, what the neighborhood's going to look like in 10 years, potential repair costs, all of that.
Yeah, you have to look at the whole picture.
Exactly. And capital investment appraisal is basically just the billionaire corporate version of doing exactly that.
That is a great way to put it. The mechanics of these decisions really dictate the future of entire economies.
Absolutely.
We are looking at how executives move past the binary idea of a project just making money or losing money, and instead how they evaluate these incredibly complex, multi-decade variables.
Right. So before we look at the massive Saudi mega projects, we really need to understand the tools in the toolbox, right?
Yeah, we have to start with the baseline math.
Right. The actual math used to make these choices. Historically, companies leaned heavily on traditional methods like the payback period and the accounting rate of return.
Right, the ARR.
Yeah. And even for a sophisticated listener, I mean, the appeal of the payback period is obvious. It just simply asks, how fast do I get my initial investment back?
Yeah, it is the ultimate quick math metric. But, you know, its simplicity is also its greatest vulnerability.
How so?
Well, the payback period has a massive blind spot. It completely ignores any cash flow that happens after the break-even point.
Oh, right.
So, for example, a logistics hub might pay off its initial construction costs in 3 years, but then immediately become obsolete.
Ouch.
Right. But a competing project might take 6 years to pay back, but then generate massive steady cash flow for the next 3 decades.
But the payback period metric favors the first project.
Exactly. Which is a strategically terrible outcome.
It also ignores the time value of money, right? Like, a dollar earned today is fundamentally worth more than a dollar earned in year 7 of a project.
Oh, absolutely. Inflation, lost opportunity costs, all of that.
Right. And that same critique applies to the accounting rate of return, or
Yes.
ARR, because it relies on accounting profit,
Yeah.
which includes like non-cash items like depreciation.
Yeah, it's looking at the books, not the bank account.
Exactly. It doesn't track the actual cash entering and leaving the business account, which can totally mask a project's true liquidity risk.
Which brings us to the modern methods, net present value, or NPV, and the internal rate of return, or IRR.
Right, the heavy hitters.
Exactly. NPV is really the workhorse of corporate finance. It takes every single dollar a project is expected to generate over its entire lifespan and discounts that future money back to its value in today's purchasing power.
And then it just subtracts the initial costs, right?
Right. And if the number is greater than zero, the project creates quantifiable wealth.
Makes sense. And then IRR serves a different but, equally crucial function. It calculates the actual percentage return expected from the project.
Yeah, it's the great equalizer.
Right. So if a sovereign wealth fund is trying to decide between funding a new desalination plant or, I don't know, a purely digital tech venture, IRR gives them a standardized percentage to compare two entirely different asset classes.
Exactly.
But wait, I have to challenge something here. If modern methods like NPV and IRR are so much clearer and they account for the time value of money, why on earth do companies still use the flawed traditional methods?
That is a very fair question.
Right. Why not just skip straight to the modern ones and mandate NPV for everything?
What's fascinating here is that time is literally capital. Deal flow volume is insane right now. A major Saudi investment firm evaluating Vision 2030 opportunities might look at, I don't know, 50 potential projects a month?
Wow, 50?
Yeah. And running a highly granular, heavily modeled net present value calculation on all 50 requires a staggering amount of analyst hours and computational power.
Oh, I see.
So they actually deploy both. The traditional methods act as an aggressive sniff test to weed out obvious bad ideas.
Oh, so they just use the flawed tool to clear the brush.
Precisely. I mean, if a proposed manufacturing plant has a payback period of 25 years on a 20-year operational lifespan, you don't need a complex discounted cash flow model to tell you it's a terrible investment.
Right. You just kill the pitch in 10 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The traditional methods quickly narrow the field from 50 projects down to 5. And then the modern methods are brought in to do the heavy lifting on the survivors.
That makes a ton of sense. But that transition from theory to practice brings up, well, what's probably the most volatile variable in all of finance.
The real world.
Exactly. Math on a spreadsheet is perfect, but the real world is messy. An airtight calculation assumes the world stays static, but in a rapidly transforming economy, the environment is anything but static.
Absolutely. And this introduces the strict dividing line in financial modeling between risk and uncertainty.
Right. And we tend to use those words interchangeably in everyday conversation, but here they mean entirely different things.
The distinction is critical. Risk is a known unknown. You have historical data, so you can actually assign a mathematical probability to an event happening.
So, like, you know there is a 15% chance of a supply chain delay, so you just build a buffer into your model.
Exactly. Mm. Uncertainty, on the other hand, is an unknown unknown. You are operating completely in the dark and you can't put a number on it.
Right, like a global pandemic shutting down shipping lanes. Or a sudden, unprecedented shift in artificial intelligence rendering a new tech hub obsolete before it even opens.
You cannot assign a reliable probability to uncertainty. And traditional methods completely freeze up when faced with either. They rely on fixed averages.
But the modern methods adapt to this, right? Like by changing the discount rate.
Exactly. The discount rate isn't just an abstract percentage. It's basically the hurdle rate that a project must clear to be deemed worthwhile.
So if you are building a standard apartment complex in an established neighborhood, you might use a discount rate of, say, 8%.
Right. But if you are building a first-of-its-kind green hydrogen facility out in the desert, the risk profile spikes. Investors demand a premium for parting with their capital in a high-risk scenario.
Makes sense.
So the firm raises the discount rate on that hydrogen plant to maybe 15%. Mathematically, this aggressively devalues the future cash flows of the project.
Got it. It forces the project to promise massive returns to justify the danger. And if it can still show a positive NPV with a 15% discount rate, it's a solid bet.
Exactly. And then we add layers like scenario testing and sensitivity checks.
Right. Scenario testing is looking at the big picture stuff, like what happens to our NPV if global oil prices drop by 20% and just stay there.
Yes, macro events. But sensitivity checks are far more granular. You are stressing the model by isolating individual variables.
I love this concept. It's basically like finding the load-bearing wall in a house. You poke at different variables, like the price of raw steel, the cost of labor, and you see which single factor, if removed or changed, causes the whole project's value to collapse.
Exactly. That is how executives avoid disaster. If a sensitivity check reveals that just a minor delay in securing permits destroys the project's return on investment, the firm knows exactly where to focus its lobbying and legal resources.
Wow. So appraisal isn't just about finding a successful idea. It's about systematically hunting down a project's structural weaknesses before committing your money.
It really is. It's about being ready to pivot.
Let's ground this in reality. We've talked about the formulas and the risks, but let's see what happens when millions are actually on the line. We have three specific case studies of these techniques being deployed in the Saudi market right now.
Right, moving from abstract theory to concrete reality.
Exactly. So the first case involves a major Saudi construction firm evaluating a massive infrastructure contract. And they didn't just, you know, run an NPV calculation and blindly sign the paperwork.
No, not at all. They started with the payback period just to ensure liquidity wouldn't be tied up for too long.
It's a sniff test.
Exactly. Once it passed that, they built their NPV model.
Mm-hmm.
But the critical step was the sensitivity analysis. They modeled historical volatility in construction materials and labor shortages.
And what did they find?
The analysis revealed a hypersensitivity to the price of raw materials. If material costs spiked mid-construction, the project's NPV instantly went negative.
Oh, wow. So the appraisal actually dictated their legal strategy. Armed with that exact threshold, the construction firm went back to the negotiating table and secured fixed price contracts for their materials.
Yeah, effectively neutralizing their biggest vulnerability. The model didn't just improve the deal, it improved the terms of the deal.
That is brilliant. Okay, moving to the second case study. A firm was looking to develop a massive solar farm aligned with Vision 2030, but they faced pure uncertainty.
Right, regarding the technology and policy. They didn't know the degradation rate of the specific solar panels they planned to use, and they were unsure how quickly new national energy grid policies would actually be implemented.
So they couldn't just plug reliable probabilities into the spreadsheet because the historical data didn't exist yet.
Exactly. When they ran the IRR based on a full-scale, immediate build, the uncertainty required such a high discount rate that the project looked totally unviable.
But they didn't walk away.
No. They used scenario planning to restructure the capital deployment. Instead of building the entire farm at once, the math directed them to a phased development approach.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they built a smaller pilot section first. This required less upfront capital, which reduced their immediate exposure.
And then once the technology was proven and the government policies were formalized, that uncertainty transformed into measurable risk.
Exactly, allowing them to confidently deploy the rest of the capital later.
Wait, so these appraisal techniques aren't just a giant yes or no calculator. They actually dictate how a company builds a project.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the highest value of these techniques is that they shape the execution strategy itself. It keeps companies flexible.
That is fascinating, which leads perfectly into the third case study, a multinational manufacturing corporation looking to expand capacity in the region. They faced immense uncertainty regarding long-term market demand for their product.
So they utilized a composite risk profile. They didn't rely on just a single metric.
Right. They blended the payback period to ensure short-term survival, NPV to confirm long-term wealth generation, and IRR to compare the expansion against alternative global investments.
And by aggressively modeling downside scenarios regarding market demand, they established the absolute worst-case outcome.
And because their multi-layered appraisal showed the company could survive even that worst-case scenario, they deployed the capital with total confidence.
It highlights a core truth about this process. Thorough capital investment appraisal doesn't eliminate risk. Risk is unavoidable.
Right.
The appraisal simply quantifies the risk so executives can determine if they are compensated enough to actually take it.
And since we just saw how a solar farm had to stay flexible, let's look at how the entire appraisal industry is evolving to become even more adaptable for the future. This isn't just about basic spreadsheets anymore.
Not at all. The industry is moving toward advanced frameworks, starting with real options theory.
Real options. So this takes the concept of financial options from the stock market and applies it to physical assets, right?
Yes. It mathematically values flexibility.
Yeah.
In traditional NPV, a project is a static go or no-go decision. But real options theory acknowledges that management can pivot.
Just like the solar farm phasing its build.
Right. A company might spend an extra $10 million up front to design a factory with modular walls and excess power capacity.
Right, and in a traditional NPV calculation, that $10 million is just a sunk cost that hurts profitability.
Exactly. But real options assigns a quantifiable financial value to the right, but not the obligation to easily expand that factory in 5 years if market demand explodes.
It proves that paying a premium today for strategic flexibility tomorrow is mathematically sound.
Exactly. And we are also seeing a massive shift in how data is ingested. We are moving way beyond basic macroeconomic inputs.
Yeah, platforms are now modeling granular cost breakdowns, real-time consumer behaviors, and incredibly complex cash flow estimates. Machine learning is spotting hidden patterns now.
And this is exactly where platforms like OSilGamma change the landscape. When you are dealing with a scale of Vision 2030 where a single policy shift regarding, say, tourism visas can alter the cash flow predictions of a dozen different mega projects, human analysts simply cannot manually update the models fast enough.
So OSilGamma serves as the technological engine executing these modern appraisals. It integrates the data streams directly into the financial modeling.
It allows firms to run thousands of simulations simultaneously. The AI spots hidden correlations in unstructured data. A human staring at a spreadsheet might miss how a localized disruption in global shipping marginally affects the timeline of a specific regulatory approval in a totally different sector.
But platforms like Azul Gamma quantify those cascading variables and instantly translate them into adjusted NPV calculations.
It provides a dynamic living appraisal rather than just a static snapshot in time.
And one of the most complex variables these platforms are now forced to quantify is ESG, environmental, social, and governance metrics. How community value and environmental impact are now hard metrics. But here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
I have to play devil's advocate here. We hear about ESG constantly, but let's be real. If a massive project makes a ton of money, like guarantees a 25% internal rate of return, but it has a terrible ESG score, do they really walk away? Or is ESG just corporate PR?
It is easy to dismiss it as corporate marketing. But in the context of a heavily centralized economic transformation like Saudi Arabia's Vision 2030, a bad ESG profile fundamentally alters your access to capital.
Wait, really? The math actually changes.
The math changes because your cost of capital skyrockets. Sustainability goals are tied directly to national strategy there.
Explain the mechanism there. How does a social or environmental score ruin the spreadsheet?
Well, if your infrastructure project does not align with a national strategy for clean energy or sustainable development, you lose access to sovereign wealth funding.
Oh, wow.
Your project is suddenly viewed as a regulatory liability. International banks, which have their own strict ESG lending mandates, will view the project as high risk.
So instead of securing a loan at a favorable 6% interest rate, you are forced into alternative lending markets at like 12%.
Exactly. Suddenly your discount rate jumps, your debt servicing doubles, and that attractive 25% IRR completely evaporates.
That is wild.
It literally changes the math. It isn't about public relations. ESG risk translates directly to financial risk.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? We have traversed from simple payback calculations all the way to AI-driven models factoring in national Saudi ESG policies.
It's a massive shift.
It is. But the core philosophy remains entirely applicable to how you navigate risk in your own domain. Whether you are an executive evaluating a multi-million dollar solar farm, or you're just weighing a major career change, applying this kind of rigorous data-backed scenario testing is the ultimate shortcut to making confident decisions.
Absolutely. You cannot just look at the upside. You have to actively hunt for your load-bearing walls.
Right. You must distinguish between the risks you can measure and the uncertainties you can't, and demand a premium for stepping into the dark.
It is about engineering flexibility into your choices so that when the environment inevitably changes, you aren't locked into a static failure. But, you know, looking at where the technology is heading, especially with platforms aggregating this much data, it raises an important question for you to think about.
What's the final variable?
We discuss how artificial intelligence and machine learning are getting incredible at modeling human behavior, supply chain disruptions, and global policy shifts. But as these predictive models get sharper, feeding on infinitely more data points, will uncertainty completely disappear? If algorithms can perfectly price every conceivable risk into the discount rate, will capital investment become a flawless, guaranteed science? Or is human unpredictability, the sheer chaotic nature of the real world, always going to find a way to break the math?
That is a staggering thought to leave on, because no matter how perfect the algorithmic X-ray machine gets, there is always an unknown lurking just off the edge of the spreadsheet. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the data, keep building in optionality, and we will catch you next time.